Trump administration promises $1,000 to every American as New York City faces a possible shutdown in place, and a doctor talks about the being culturally competent in the time of COVID-19. With these and other stories, I'm Paul DiRienzo with the news for Tuesday, March 17th, 2020. Today is St. Patrick's Day, but with New Yorkers and millions of Americans waking up to the new reality of the coronavirus pandemic, there was little public celebration. Iconic Irish bars, usually the center of merriment and celebration, were closed by city order, and for the first time, New Yorkers will be able to place takeout orders at bars. The city's St. Patrick's Day parade was postponed for the first time in 250 years. Restaurants and bars were ordered closed as of Monday night, except for takeout and delivery orders. Meanwhile, roughly two dozen people with the St. Patrick's Day Parade Board of Directors and committee members marched up Manhattan's Fifth Avenue in the rain Tuesday morning to the sounds of bagpipes in order to keep the tradition alive. Meanwhile, the White House held a news conference where President Trump announced expanded plans to combat the COVID-19 or coronavirus pandemic. Trump asks Congress to unleash a flood of emergency economic aid. Trump wants checks sent to the public within 2 weeks as part of a package that officials said could approach a cost of $1 trillion. "We want to go big," Trump said at a White House briefing. "We want to get it done and have a big infusion." Treasury Secretary Steve Mnuchin said Trump was stepping back from his plan to eliminate payroll taxes and instead will be supporting direct cash payouts of about $1,000 per person.
Although the president likes the idea of the payroll tax holiday, I will tell you what we've heard from many people, and the president has said we can consider this. The payroll tax holiday would get people money over the next 6 to 8 months. We're looking at sending checks to Americans immediately. And what we've heard from hardworking Americans, many companies have now shut down, whether it's bars or restaurants. Americans need cash now, and the president wants to get cash now. And I mean now, in the next 2 weeks.
How much?
I will be previewing that with the Republicans. There's some numbers out there. They may be a little bit bigger than what's in the press.
Go ahead. Please wait.
What help are you going to give to airlines specifically?
I've had discussions with all the airline CEOs this week. The airline CEOs have had conversations with the Senate and the House. As the president said, I was up with a subset of the Republican senators last night. I've discussed that with them. I think, as you know, this is worse than 9/11. For the airline industry, this is they are almost ground to a halt. The president wants to make sure that although we don't want people to travel unless it's critical, we want to maintain for critical travel the right to have domestic travel.
$50 billion, is that
enough? I'm not going to comment on the specifics. I will tell you, we're very focused. There's a lot of workers. This is strategically important to us, and we'll be working with Congress on this.
The airline industry will be in good shape. Yeah, go ahead, please.
There's been talk about $1,000 checks to every American, increasing support among Republicans and some Democrats for that. Would you support that going to everyone, or would you support some sort of income restriction on who gets a check?
Well, I think it's clear. We don't need to send people who make $1 million a year checks, okay? But that's one of the ideas we like. We're going to preview that today, and then we'll be talking about details afterwards.
Well, I think we're going to do something that gets money to them as quickly as possible. That may not be an accurate way of doing it, because obviously some people shouldn't be getting checks for $1,000, and we'll have a pretty good idea by the end of the day what we're going to be doing.
We want to make sure Americans get money in their pockets quickly. We want to make sure small business owners have access to funds. We want to make sure that hotels, airlines, we have an entire package. We'll be laying out those details later today.
After a heart-stopping drop at the start of the week, the stock market rose during Trump's briefing as he and aides sketched out elements of the economic rescue package. Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell says he's ready to act after the Senate votes on the House's $100 billion package of sick pay, emergency food, and free testing that's on track for Trump's signature. Senate Democrats have produced their own $750 billion proposal, including $400 billion to shore up hospitals and other emergency operations in response response to the global pandemic and $350 billion to bolster the safety net with unemployment checks and other aid to Americans. In international news, the Johns Hopkins Center for Health Security reports 167,511 confirmed COVID-19 cases and 6,606 deaths across 152 countries, an increase of 13,903 cases, 862 deaths, and 4 countries from the previous day. Currently, the hardest hit country is Italy. 25,058 cases, including 2,339 healthcare workers and 1,697 deaths nationwide. 20% of deaths in that country are people over 80 years of age. Italian health officials report 6.5% of people with the disease were reported as asymptomatic, and a total of 58.8% had mild or very mild diseases or no symptoms. The European Union has barred most travelers from outside the bloc of 26 nations from entering for 30 days. Great Britain is not participating. In the United States, 4,226 COVID-19 cases and 75 deaths across 49 states in Washington, D.C., Puerto Rico, Guam, and the U.S. Virgin Islands have been reported, more than double the 1,629 cases reported on Friday, March 13th. Of these cases, only 474 have been identified as travel-related or from close contact of another identified case. 3,752 cases, 88.8% of the total, are still under investigation. Johns Hopkins reports the San Francisco Bay Area in California instituted a shelter-in-place starting at 12:01 a.m. this morning in order to enforce enhanced social distancing measures. In New York, as of Tuesday, more than 1,500 people in New York State had tested positive for the virus, up from 950 the day before. 814 of the cases were in the city, including a woman in her 50s who lives in a city homeless shelter. 12 people have died from the virus in New York State, including at least 7 in New York City. Speaking earlier today, Mayor Bill de Blasio said the city is seriously considering shelter in place, requiring 8 million New Yorkers to stay at home.
We're absolutely considering that. I mean, right now we have taken a series of steps to reduce the number of people who are circling around, get people a telecommute, obviously social distancing, closing the schools, which was particularly painful, closing the bars and restaurants. But we're going to look at all other options, and it could get to that for sure. It could get that for the whole country. But here's the thing I'm worried about. So let's say we do that. You're still going to have a substantial number of cases of people who need hospitalization under any scenario, even the most perfect shutdown scenario. We are going to have to build in a huge amount of new hospital and medical capacity. I just announced yesterday a plan to create at least 8,200 new beds through a variety of means, or make available 8,200 new hospital beds. We're going to need a lot more than that. And the thing we don't have, Allison, which the federal government's the only solution on, those ventilators, we have some, we don't have enough. The surgical masks, all the things you need for a hospital setting, even the basic things we need to protect people, the hand sanitizer. The federal government, I've used the word mobilization, nationalization, there's different ways to think about it, but the federal government has to ensure that the industries that create those vital supplies are at maximum production, and then they're distributed where they are needed most, as we do in wartime. And we need the United States military on the ground. Right now, we should have hospital ships going where they're needed, to places like New York for sure. We should have the extraordinarily well-trained medical personnel of the United States military deployed forward to the parts of America that are suffering the most. I say, look, anyone, any member of the military who's working on a border wall or anything that's not coronavirus right now in the United States, I'm not talking about our troops based overseas, but if you're a member of the military, we need you right now at the front, and the front is in the places where the coronavirus epidemic is worse.
De Blasio said there would be a huge need for more healthcare workers, so roughly 6,000 recently retired medical workers in the city are being asked to return to work as volunteers. He called for the federal government to send in the military to help with the expected response. Meanwhile, medical workers throughout the city have already been mobilizing to deal with what may become the greatest health crisis in the city's history. Somos Community Care is a network of 2,500 healthcare providers for culturally competent medical care aimed at the poorest New Yorkers. Organizers call a patient-centered healthcare delivery model. They're located in the Bronx, Brooklyn, Manhattan, and Queens. Dr. Yomaris Pena has been at some of the biggest disasters of the past decade. She says the biggest enemy facing healthcare providers and patients is not the virus, but the stress caused by fear of the virus.
Everyone has been calling. Everyone is very wary. Patients are calling to get appointments. We have a protocol which we have established, not only in my office, but it's through Somos that since the beginning of the whole pandemic, when it first started, that it was actually still in baby steps, what we would consider epidemic at that time. Someone was already preparing all the providers so that we had a protocol in place in order to avoid cases to coming into the office that will contaminate further patients. But that didn't mean not allowing the care. That just meant, in my case, I'm always 24/7 available for the patients, meaning they could contact my office, talk to my staff, talk to me. So we're taking care of them. And we're also the ones that are not sick or don't have any symptoms. We're just basically trying to teach them and educate them.
Right. Those are two questions I have. Well, the first question is, do people actually have coronavirus who are calling you, and what kind of questions do they have?
I haven't had a case of coronavirus calling me. I've had cases of what we call a person of interest or a person exposed to someone that was positive for coronavirus. So those cases I've had. And they, at the beginning of the, I would say like 2 weeks ago, it was a little bit complicated because we didn't have protocols, but now we do. So we know exactly what to tell them. We know exactly what to tell the patient if they have symptoms. So they have to quarantine themselves and be at home at least for 14 days because they could be in something called a prodrome, which is the time where you have absolutely no symptoms, but the virus is in your body.
What kind of questions do they call with?
They call, doctor, what should I do? Because my friend is the wife of the cab driver that was exposed and he's positive and he's in the hospital. And I'm okay, but so those are the type of questions. Or, doctor, I don't know what to do. And what do they mean about social distancing? So can I kiss my kids? What happens if someone is sick at home? What should I do? They have all these questions. They have the questions about how to keep themselves healthy when they have someone that is positive, in the event that they have someone positive. They also call more realistically about cough, about fever, about feeling weak. Some of them also call about anxiety. They're very anxious about all the things that they're listening and watching at the news and the TV and, unfortunately, the media.
Unfortunately? Why did you say unfortunately the media?
I would not say unfortunately. I would say because they didn't understand at the beginning what we were trying to communicate. The message wasn't going across because the population wasn't seeing cases. And remember, if you see something all the time in the media, people that already have anxiety, they will increase their anxiety levels or their cortisol levels will increase as well. And always remember, if you're a diabetic or you're a patient that have a chronic illness, whenever you're under stress, you're going to get worse because the immune system also gets weak.
Are you worried about being overwhelmed?
Not in my case, because I am a doctor that so far, this is my 6th year undergoing medical missions. So I am used to doing and seeing patients under stressful situations. But I could see how people could react in ways that because you don't have education, because there's a fear factor there, you could actually become overwhelmed. Not me, because I actually do this and I really like to help when there's a chaotic scenario, meaning I won't go home and take care of myself. I will go into action and take care of others.
Okay, that's my next question. How about the effect that this is having on the providers, on the first responders, on the people who have to be there on the front line?
My staff is calm now because every day I come in and I educate them. I tell them how the situation is going, how we're doing the screening, what are we doing for the population outside, and they know. In terms of the physicians that I've worked with in the screening sites, they have remained calm. In terms of the other doctors, they have called me because they have absolutely no idea. Some other physicians that are close to me, they have no idea how to, if they should open the practices, if they should keep the practices running. And I said to them, we need to be open. We need to be accessible because we are the first line for everyone to call in. Otherwise, we're going to get the emergencies overwhelmed, and that is going to be chaos. In that sense, that's what we are trying to prevent.
Has anybody mentioned that you're very courageous? You're like an amazing person and one of the most important people in America right now at this moment?
A lot of people have told me that I'm courageous, yes. And that's an adjective that I want others to actually have within themselves. And not to be afraid. You know why? Because I don't know if you remember, but you remember that there was an HIV epidemic at some point, and a lot of people will walk the other way, and some other people will go in and take care of those cases. So we have gone through so many things that they have taught us that we need to just have protocols in place, try to follow them, remain calm, and go into action.
Very good.
So thank you for your amazing words, but I wish that I could inspire others to just go and help and just listen to what every healthcare provider that is an expert is saying out there, because this is how we're going to avoid this from having a death in our families. We don't want our grandparents, we don't want our friends or our family members that have chronic illnesses to actually be one casualty, right? So let's all get together and get this done on a positive way, trying to follow the measures. For example, Maria and I in Puerto Rico, when we went and we helped out twice, like those are things that for me, they are normal, because I saw how to survive without electricity for a couple of weeks, right? And you learn that and you kind of teach that around. So it's all about your experience, extrapolating it into the real world, into what's happening now. We need to adapt to every circumstance. Remember that.
Mm-hmm. All right, we will. Thank you very much, Doctor. Really appreciate your time. And that's Dr. Yamaris Pena with the Somos Community Care, a network of 2,500 healthcare providers for culturally competent medical care in New York City. And you're listening to the news on WBAI New York. I'm Paul DiRienzo. China has said it will revoke the credentials of journalists at three American newspapers in response to new U.S. restrictions on Chinese media. Beijing is demanding that U.S. journalists working for the New York Times, Wall Street Journal, and Washington Post newspapers, whose credentials are due to expire before the end of 2020, hand back their press cards within 10 days. Earlier today, Secretary of State Mike Pompeo spoke to reporters about China's move.
Do you believe that China is honestly reporting its infection numbers?
The disinformation campaign that they are waging is designed to shift responsibility. Now's not the time for recrimination. Now's the time to solve this global pandemic and work to take down risk to Americans and people all across the world. My team just got off the phone with our ambassador in Italy. The remarkable work our team's doing there to help the Italian people would make every American proud. We're doing this all across the world. There will come a day when we will go evaluate how the entire world responded. We know this much. We know that the first government to be aware of the Wuhan virus was the Chinese government. That imposes a special responsibility to raise the flag, to say, we have a problem. This is different and unique and presents risk. And it took an awful long time for the world to become aware of this risk that was sitting there residing inside of China. We'll do the after action when the time is right. Every nation has responsibility to share all of their data, all of their information in as timely and accurate fashion as they have the ability to do, not only because it's the right thing to do, because that's how you save lives for your own people as well. The Chinese Communist Party had a responsibility to do this not only for Americans and Italians and South Koreans and Iranians who are now suffering, but for their own people as well.
How do you think their response is now, currently?
We're all working to solve the problem.
Thanks. Mr. Secretary, I was wondering, first of all, how you're feeling.
I feel great.
And
not as good when I'm here with y'all, but the rest of the day I've been feeling fantastic. Your third question was about the announcement that the Chinese Communist Party made today. Two things to say about that. First, in their statement, they suggested somehow that the actions that we had taken here in America prompted this. This is an apples to apples. You all know the press freedoms you have. We're just joking about them, right? You all get to ask me whatever question you want, and I give you the answer. We know that kind of freedom doesn't exist inside of China. Indeed, the Chinese will tell you that they want more information, people to know more about their country, and yet they continue to take actions like the one you see today where they deny the world the capacity to know what's really going on inside of their country. The individuals that we identified a few weeks back were not media, they were acting here freely. They were part of Chinese propaganda outlets. We'd identified these as foreign missions under American law. These aren't apples to apples in any respect. And I regret China's decision today to further foreclose the world's ability to conduct the free press operations that, frankly, would be really good for the Chinese people. Really good for the Chinese people in these incredibly challenging global times where more information, more transparency are what will save lives. This is unfortunate. We just saw it. I hope they'll reconsider.
And that was Secretary of State Mike Pompeo. President Trump has repeatedly blamed China for the virus, echoing conspiracy theories on the internet that claim the virus escaped from a Chinese bio-war lab near the city of Wuhan. China has blamed the U.S. in return for providing the coronavirus to Chinese researchers and for not doing anything once the disease started getting out there by denying it was a threat. But Kathy Kelly, co-coordinator of Voices for Creative Nonviolence, says the United States sanctions against countries like Iraq and Iran will just blow back on Americans while causing untold damage in the process.
Iran has seen a terrible decline in its ability to sell its oil. 70% of its revenue comes from oil sales. And the Trump administration has bullied other countries and said, if you buy that oil from Iran, then we'll exclude you from the markets we control. And so Japan, India, Europe, South Korea stopped buying Iranian oil. And whereas once Iran was selling 2.5 million barrels per day before that March 2018 decision by President Trump, now they're down to a few hundred thousand barrels per day. So the LA Times just quoted an Iranian TV station saying that a million people could die because of the spread of the virus because they simply don't have the medical equipment and the medicines that are needed. And then, you know, compound that with the fact that there are many, many, many migrants from Afghanistan, millions living in Iran. And just in the last 2 weeks, 50,000 people have left Iran, crossing into Afghanistan. And so this is almost certain to bring a spread of the virus to Afghanistan, which has a healthcare system gutted by United States military war.
Do you think the United States would help Afghanistan and Iran and Iraq?
I think with regard to Afghanistan, the United States has bases there. And so, you know, it would be pretty silly for the United States to say, well, we don't care if the virus spreads in your country. But there's a question of whether the United States would block a request from Iran to the International Monetary Fund for a $5 billion loan. And it's been such a display of cruelty toward people in Iraq under economic sanctions, with hundreds of thousands of Iraqi children under age five died because of those sanctions. And then it was almost as though that kind of economic war was punctuated by the hideous military bombing campaigns. Where's Iraq today? You know, they're begging the United States, do social distancing, please. Get rid of your bases and go home. I think that it would be very hard for the U.S. government and the military to give up the idea that somehow the U.S. has an automatic right to determine the futures of other countries and control other people's resources. We are at an unusual time. I mean, how relevant is the military to security in terms of this virus? In 2 weeks, we've seen extraordinary, unexpected, unimaginable changes, really. Who would have thought that in a country where people are so distracted by sports and entertainment, suddenly, poof, you know, it's all gone in terms of viewership in stadiums. And so maybe it's a time when people can radically rethink where our resources go and where our security is found.
And that's that's Kathy Kelly, co-coordinator of Voices for Creative Nonviolence. Now, WBAI has a lot more information on the COVID-19 coronavirus pandemic, how it's playing out in New York, the United States, and around the world. Tune into the news at 6 p.m. weekdays. On Thursday, we'll be broadcasting a one-hour special on the pandemic. So we're going to cut it out today right now and urge you to stay at home, stay undercover, stay safe. And that's some of the news for Tuesday, March 17th, 2020. The news was produced with Linda Perry. Our engineer is Reggie Johnson. For the WBAI News, I'm Paul DiRienzo.